Thank you for joining us as we discover together how to empower our hearts for extraordinary living. I'm Jackie Woods, here with my son and co-host Russell Woods, bringing you Heart Matters Radio, streaming to you live from the JackieWoods.org website. Each week at 3 Eastern Time, we take an inward journey to explore the heart energies that make up our internal essence. By getting to know who you are in the inside, you can live from the inside out. When you let your heart matter, you will be able to claim control over your choices and all of your creations in life. So as we talk each week about an energy or a quality of spirit, which is a heart energy that we call them, you will get to know yourself. So join us each week as we meditate on an energy together. Not only will you get to know who you are, but we'll expand who you are, because you're going to get to know yourself in a new way. The energy each week has a little saying by it, and you can sign up for that on our website, the JackieWoods.org website. And every Saturday morning you will get the heart energy that we're going to be talking about. This week it's humor. And the little saying says, humor sees the absurdity of non-heartful actions. As I was meditating on this, and we do meditate, so our heart can speak to us. And yes, your heart speaks to you in thoughts. And that's the left side of your brain, but it also can engage the right side of your brain if you give it a space where you quiet your body, your mind, and your emotions, and just let the heart speak to you. But you have to have all the other voices quiet, or they're going to speak and it'll become a fantasy in your right brain. But if you just get them all very quiet and are sitting still, then the heart can give you a message. And it will not only have words, but it will have a picture image, so that you will have a clearer understanding than you would of just the words. So my right brain picture of this was very interesting, and I'm going to tell it before I talk about any story or anything that happened in my life, because this comes first. Now, for 3 or 4 days last week when I would meditate, I got the energy of sacredness. It's really up for us as a community. In fact, it's up for us as a country to really claim this energy of sacredness. And so I was meditating and carrying that energy into my life each day. And the last day that I had this, several days actually, that I got the picture of sacredness, I got... It was a pearl and a clam, and the words that came to me is the pearl of great price,
mm-hmm.
that they talk about in the Bible, sacredness being the greatest pearl of all, the pearl of great price. Well, when I got humor, it was first just a lot of bubbles, you know, like when you blow through one of those little pipes, those mm-hmm. little bubble pipes, right. And you have bubbles. Well, but floating on top of these bubbles was this pearl of great price.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, well, how interesting is that? I mean, humor is carrying the sacredness. And then I realized that as the bubbles would swoop down, there would be a dirty spot, and they would sort of either slide over that bubble spot and carry the sacredness to another spot. And if it was clean, fine. They just sort of settle there. Or if it was dirty, sometimes the bubbles would foam and clean up the dirty spot.
Uh-huh.
So I'd never thought of humor cleaning anything. Uh-huh. I thought it was mostly something that would help you to see clearly what was real and what was unreal. In other words, the absurdity of non-heartful patterns as opposed to the sacredness of heartful. But it actually has the power to not only see that, but to actually do some cleansing. And that's why getting a picture is so important, and why I wanted to start with that today, because that, you know, I could have understood all the words that I was understanding about the pearl of great price and bubbly, you know, humor, and all of that made sense until I saw the picture in action. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, ooh, well, that's kind of new. I never thought of that before. I don't think my left brain could have come up with that on its own.
Yeah. Yeah, the right brain takes you outside your box a lot of times.
It definitely does.
That's cool.
So what happened with you in your meditation, Russ?
In my meditation, I got an image of, and there's a story in Greek mythology of the gods putting all the virtues into this box and giving it to this woman, Pandora, and she lets them out, and courage and strength and kindness and all those things fly away, and mankind has to seek for them forever. And she closes the box almost too late, and there's only one thing left in it, and that's hope. And that's all mankind has to hang on to. And I always thought, well, you know, hope's not really a virtue. That's just most of the time an emotional wishing that things would get better. So in my meditation, I got a picture of that box, and the box was open and everything flew out. But in the bottom, instead of hope, there was humor. It was a little grin, like on a smiley face, and you could pick it up and put it on your face, and it would, you know, throw you into that energy of humor. And it was for me that last great hope. You know, when life is at its worst, you can call on humor, and it will pick you up when your
on
courage is gone. Yeah, when your strength is gone, when you can't find an ounce of kindness in you. If you can still laugh at the situation, then you don't fall into that pit of blackness.
Laugh at the absurdities of the non-heartful karma that you have created.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, so now I can tell the story that came to mind after my meditation. Back a couple years ago, before I had my hip surgery, you know, my hip hurt a lot and I didn't want to travel far. But we wanted to take a little trip. So we journeyed all the way from Columbus, North Carolina to Columbia, South Carolina, which is all of 2 hours, which was about the extent of what I could take in sitting.
Mm-hmm.
So before we got there, 2 hours I discovered was a little much. I needed to get out and walk. My hip was really hurting. So we pulled into this little town of Newberry. Yeah, Newberry. Newberry, South Carolina, just to stretch our legs. Well, we discovered they had an old opera house there that was open. So we went into this old opera house, and lo and behold, they had a tour person there that would take you on a tour guide. Well, I really wasn't, I mean, it was kind of fun to see the auditorium of this old opera house, but I didn't really care to hear the whole history of it. I just wanted to stretch my legs. But this lady who was the tour guide evidently was pretty bored.
She was not to be denied.
She was not to be denied. I said to Rodney, I said, well, why don't we go now? And the woman turned at me not with humor, but with a ferocious look on her face and says, you can't leave. I'm not finished with you yet.
Did you think, oh, my, what have we gotten ourselves into?
Well, you know, I realized I had a choice. And this is where we know we can call on humor. And like any heart energy can call on it, my choice was to be irritated at this obnoxious woman who said I couldn't leave because she wasn't finished with me yet. And she wasn't joking either, because I do really get jokes most of the time. Or I could see the humor in how the unrealness. She wasn't wanting to take us there to really inform us or anything. Mm-hmm. She was just bored. It was her lack of heart energy. It wasn't that she didn't have the information, but she was just bored out of her mind. You could tell by her expression when we got there and how grateful she was to have something to do, to latch onto. And so, you know, the absurdity of that was so funny that Rodney and I both just laughed and laughed and laughed. And that lightened her a little bit and put her in a different space. The bubbles cleared. Mm-hmm. And instead of her just wanting to do it out of boredom, I believe she really wanted to join us. And mm-hmm. in that sense of her wanting to join us, you know, the bubbles kind of, the humor kind of cleared it. We really did have a wonderful exchange.
Uh-huh.
But it wouldn't have been a wonderful. It would have been a very dry, factual thing. Or I could have left. But, you know, realizing that humor isn't just somebody making us laugh. Humor is a choice.
Right.
So
that's a good point.
That came to mind. And I just, every time I think of that woman, sort of with her hands on her hips, looking me in the face and getting between me and the door and saying, but you can't leave. I'm not finished with you.
Yeah.
You are my prisoner.
Well, the story that came to me follows very closely with that vision I had in my meditation. It's not a very funny story, but it sort of explains, you know, how I view the energy. When I was in seventh grade, I was a safety patrol. I got to wear this little orange sash belt that went around your waist and then across your shoulder and stand out at the crosswalk and say, stop, kids, wait, you know, and then the car would go by, okay, come on now. You know, it was this position of authority. But you had to get there early to do it because, you know, some of the kids would be walking in really early. So we had to get there like half an hour before school started or something like that. So I couldn't ride the bus to school anymore. I had to start riding my bike. And I rode my bike all that year. And in late winter, January, February, something like that, early spring, I was riding my bike to school early one day, and I had to cross a busy street, and it had been raining, and I was not really watching the traffic. I was watching the light, and as soon as the light clicked and it said, you know, walk, I pushed my bike off from the curb. I wasn't walking it. I was sitting on the seat and just sort of paddling my feet, half riding but not pedaling the bike across the crosswalk. And this woman comes screaming over the hill and saw me too late and threw on her brakes and on the wet pavement slid into me and hit the bike. Didn't hit my leg, thank goodness, would have crushed it, but right behind my leg the bike was just bent in half. And I went flying through the air, skidded on the concrete. I can't for the life of me remember those last 2 minutes or so. They just, you know, were wiped out in the impact. So I don't know how I ended up where I ended up, but the next thing I remember, I'm picking myself up off the pavement and trying to collect all my scattered books, and there's blood everywhere, and I hobbled over to the side of the road, and the ambulance people showed up really quick. I don't know if my sense of time was distorted or if they were just really close nearby for some reason.
Well, the fire trucks were just around the corner. That was on Northwood Hills.
Somebody must have called or run down there or mm-hmm. something, but it happened really quick. And before I know it, they've got me sitting on the tailgate of an ambulance, and the guy's checking me over. And I'm saying, I got to get my stuff. I got to get my bike. And he said, well, we've collected your things, your bike's pretty wrecked. And he pointed over there, and it's like bent in half. So I don't think you'll be riding it anytime soon. And I turned to him and said, well, in that case, how would you like to buy a used bike? And it was a lame little joke, but it made me feel immensely better. It was like, I knew I was going to be okay. I mean, that was like the worst point of my young life so far. I'm injured. My prized possession, my bicycle, is wrecked. You know, I don't know if I'm going to be able to go to school for the next 3 months or whether I've got a fractured leg or whatever. And in that bleak moment, you know, just being able to laugh a little bit and pull myself into that place of humor, it showed me that, you know, life really is an illusion. And if you don't get too tied up in what you did or how this is turning out, you're still who you are. You know, you're still your strength and your kindness and your creativity and all those things. You're not going to lose any of that, no matter what's happened to you. And humor to me is such a wonderful thing because it automatically puts you into that observer position. I mean, if I tell a joke, if I say, you know, a priest, a rabbi, and a gorgeous blonde woman walk into a bar, instantly you're visualizing something. It's put you in the bleachers and you're watching something unfold. And it just sort of reminds you that you're watching a play, that this is an illusion, that it's not the real thing, that you're not trapped in it.
Well, I can't say that I found much humor in that occurrence, and but your story is very valid because by the time I got to you, you were in a good place,
mm-hmm.
and you tried to help me. I'll tell the story on myself. It I don't know that it fits with any humor for me whatsoever, but some man called me and said, "Your son's been hit by a car." I started screaming uncontrollably, couldn't stop. And when I finally took a breath, he said, "He's not dead." And so he told me where you were, and I got up there as quickly as I could because traffic was stopped. And so it took me a while. So by the time, you know, they had already checked you out, you were okay. You had gotten to your better place. And I was sobbing when I got to you. I mean, just totally a wreck. And your comment was, "It's okay, Mom. I'm okay. It could have been a lot worse." And you were comforting me. Obviously, your piece of humor had gotten you in a much better place, but I can't say I had any humor at all that day.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have been good. But in circumstances like that, it's very, very, very hard to realize that you have a choice, because if I had been irritated or in judgment, I might have chosen. But to see the absurdity of that action, of that illusion, was very, 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 very hard.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, to see that there was any purpose in that, to see that it was a creation that could turn out for the best, and you get lost.
Yeah.
You get lost. So your humor saved you. I could have used it that day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, while we're talking about humor, we usually like to mention a CD that will help you. And we all three had different possibilities today, so you might want to look at the website and go through all of the growth resources we have just to see what would work best for you, because it'll jump out at you. But the one that I felt would be Understanding Your Creations, and that fits with what Russell's saying. You know, begin to understand them as something that you do have a choice about. You can see the heartfulness in it or go to find the heartfulness in it. At that moment, I couldn't see it. I had to find it after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
And no doubt that made an imprint on your life that will make you very, 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 very careful and bring a lot of care to the physical to see what could happen. But you know, none of that was there for me at that moment. I couldn't see anything. But understanding your creations is where you have to go. If not in the moment where you feel you can have a choice and be that observer, they're going to keep coming back to you till you do understand them. You're going to keep recreating them. So that's a very important CD. It's not a workshop. It's a CD. So do please check it out. We have an email from Donna in Orlando, Florida. "Hi, Jackie and Russell. I meditated this morning, and I've got to say it was a hoot. Once I connected with humor, instead of a picture like you talk about, I got an inspiration for a practical joke to play on my friends. It was so funny it took all my strength not to laugh out loud during the meditation. While the joke was very funny, it wasn't mean. It felt like what you see when two children are full of play on a playground, light and energetic. I actually felt inspired. Of course, I did have to do the joke right away, as it was too good to pass up. all the while I was filled with light, with that lighthearted feeling. Thanks for such a delightful start to my day.
That was nice.
That was very nice. That was very nice. Thank you so much for sharing. We do appreciate it when people share. It means you're joining us.
Mm-hmm.
And some people share with us their meditation even though they have to go to work.
Mm-hmm.
They email it to us. So thank you very, very, very much. You know, we talk about these energies sort of theoretically. That's why we try to bring a story to bring it into life. But if people have a, not just their meditation, but if they have a story that it brings to their mind, I would like to hear that too, wouldn't you?
Sure. Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah. This is from Susan in Valdosta, Georgia. Jackie, you know there's always a lot to be grateful for if you are just aware and take time to look for it. For example, as I'm sitting here typing, I think how nice it is that wrinkles don't hurt. And then she adds, just wondering what part does laughter play in the energy of humor? Thank you, Susan. What part does laughter play in the energy of humor? Well, many times we do laugh, but I don't know that you got to the point of laughter when you had your humorous thought that came out of that accident. I don't know if you got to that. It doesn't have to accompany it. We usually think of humor and laughter going together, but I don't see that they have to. But I do really see that when I'm in a humorous mood, even though I may not laugh out loud,
mm-hmm.
it's like my emotions laugh.
Yeah. Yeah. I just see laughter as one of the forms that humor can manifest through. You know, the story that jumps to mind about laughter is Norman Cousins in his book Anatomy of an Illness, where he talks about he cured himself of, or at least went into remission, around heart disease and also arthritis at two separate times in his life with just taking lots of vitamin C and watching funny old movies. He watched the Marx Brothers and the Three Stooges and stuff like that, and he would just get into a place where he could laugh just long and hard for 10 minutes or so, and then he could sleep through the night, and he got gradually better and better and cured his illness by being able to channel that humor through laughter.
Mm-hmm. Now, when we say that you're able to see what is unreal and to laugh about it instead of to judge it or get angry at it or be hurt by it, to be able to turn that and say, you know, there's absurdity in life, but there's also sacredness, mm-hmm. that pearl of great price that I saw, and it's like a choice between the two. But sometimes people can be very sarcastic and call that humor.
Mm-hmm.
When you can be sarcastic in your humor and it still be humor.
Right.
But if you're doing sarcastic to hurt somebody instead of just to laugh or to be humorous about the absurdities, then you're doing it from a mean-spirited way. And humor is not mean-spirited.
Yeah, it doesn't really carry the energy then.
No, it does not.
That's a great point. Thank you for making that.
Yeah, we did a roast one time for one of the students who had a great deal of humor that he could give out, but interestingly enough, when we gave him the roast, there was a lot of humor, and he took it very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting that he could see the humor in others, but not in himself, and that's a problem a lot of people have too. They can't be humorous about their own situations.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it was all done in humor, except one person. And one person was very vicious in what they had to say.
Yeah.
Mean-spirited, even though it was said under the whole big umbrella of a roast, which is humor.
Mm-hmm.
We have an email from Sarah in Columbus, North Carolina. I like to kid with my mom, but she doesn't handle it well. What should I do? Well, you know, when we try to be funny with people and they don't resonate that humor with us, we're not going to have a resonance with them. We can give them the contribution of humor, but it's not something we can share if they don't have a lot of humor. So I guess we just have to make the choice. Do we just want to put it out there and see if somebody wants to resonate with it? Or if we know they can't handle it, it would be like saying to someone that you feel has beauty and is really beautiful, you're so beautiful, but they always just make an excuse and can never receive it. I mean, it doesn't mean you can't keep giving the offering, but you can't expect it to be received or resonated all the way through. Do you want to add to that?
Yeah, when I was in college, I had a roommate who was, he was the drummer in one of the bands that I was in, and that band fell apart, but we stayed friends and we became roommates. And he and I worked different schedules. He would work late nights at the phone company changing their computer drives out. And I at the time was working during the daytime, so we'd pass each other, you know, about dinner time. He'd be going off to work as I'd be coming in, and he'd say, you know, my half of the rent's in an envelope on the refrigerator, just add yours, or we're running low on fabric softener. You know, we'd write little notes to each other. And he'd come in early in the morning and be dog tired, and of course you can't go out and have fun after work when you get off work at 8 a.m. You know, there's nothing to do. So he'd come home and he's watching old movies or something and bouncing around the house, and he'd get the munchies. And so he'd go into my part of the cupboard and dig around, and I had an affinity for these smoked almonds that I would always keep a can or two of in my part of the pantry at that time. And he became nearly addicted to them. And he'd munch down my almonds.
Who was this?
This is Brett.
Oh, okay.
He'd munch down my almonds. And, you know, sometimes he'd see me before he would leave or something like that and say, oh, I got into the almonds again. I'm really sorry. I'll buy you some more. I promise, you know. And it just built until, you know, I don't know why I kept buying the almonds, because I hardly ever got to eat them. But I came in one night and I was really, really just in the mood to just snack on some of those almonds. And I went to the pantry and I pulled out the container and I opened it up, and there's like one pathetic little almond down in the bottom of the container, and there's a piece of paper stuffed in there. And I pulled it out, and on it he had written, I am the lowest worm in the world. I have eaten all your almonds again. I hope you can find it in your heart to forgive me. I was so mad at him that I didn't find it funny at the time. But later, you know, after he got home from work, by the time we talked again, I had been won over by that humor. And so my advice to Sarah or anybody like them who gets in those situations where they're just at it with somebody is bring your humor. Say what's funny to you. The person may not get it in the moment, but it'll put you in a better place. And by the time you talk to them again, it may put them in a better place. It may not, but at least it puts you in a better place.
Yes. My husband says he enjoys his own humor, is why he does it, not to entertain anybody else. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, and I can't say that I don't do that sometimes too, but I really like to share energies with people. So you just have to say, where are you? Do you do it because it lightens you and you hope they get it as a contribution, or do you really want to share it? And I really like to share humor. Mm-hmm. And so if I try with somebody that they just can't reciprocate back, I usually don't try again. There's some people I'm not humorous with, mm-hmm. and other people that I know I can share that. So to Sarah, I would say, You just have to decide what works for you. But no, it's just don't expect it. If you expect to get a response from somebody, whether it's humor or kindness or beauty or anything you share, if you expect that response back, then you may be disappointed. You know, if you can read the script and know what's been happening and say, well, I'm never going to get it here. Do I want to give it? Then you have a choice.
Yeah. I we always try and give baby steps to people. And I would say one of my baby steps for this energy is to do what Brett did and try and laugh at one of your own patterns. Mm-hmm. Think of how absurd your actions are and say, you know, this is ridiculous. I can't believe I did this. But laugh at your own pattern, and whether the other person joins you or not, it puts you outside of the pattern and allows you to mm-hmm. be who you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you can't learn to laugh at yourself, then you're going to either defend yourself or beat yourself up. You're either going to defend and go into why that was okay to do that and just stick with the pattern, or you're going to beat yourself up, which just adds more weight to the pattern, and you keep the pattern that way. Mm-hmm. So if it's not a heartful pattern, the bubble picture that I had, I love.
Mm-hmm. That's a great picture.
If you can laugh at it, you know it's not the pearl of great price.
Mm-hmm.
It just needs to be cleaned up, so it'll carry the sacredness, the pearl of great price, to another part of your life.
Mm-hmm.
We have a time now to acknowledge a sponsor. You know you can go green online. Reduce consumption by exploring Gently Used Boutique at bountifulbuys.com. It has clothes, accessories, gifts, books that will go easy on the planet and on your wallet. So go green. Go green online. Not only will you save the planet and save your wallet, but you will also save a lot of time. That's bountifulbuys.com. We have an email from Bill in Orlando. Bill is a regular listener of ours.
Bill!
I laugh at TV shows, but I don't think I'm funny. So I guess I enjoy humor, but I don't know how to do it or be it. Any advice? You want to start, Russell?
When I was living with my wife in our first apartment, we were in the basement. They had turned it into an apartment, but it was originally the basement of an old Victorian house in one of the in-town neighborhoods in Atlanta. It was a very nice place. They had just refurbished it. But it was the ground floor, and the backyard was a huge soccer field, part of a park there. So there's an infinite supply of mice that can come in. They worm their way up through the pipes wherever the water heater pipes and the sink pipes all come into the house. They wormed up through there. And they would go from there through all the cabinets and under the countertops and get behind the refrigerator and then come out along the wall and frolic all over our kitchen.
Oh, gosh, how awful.
Yeah. So we'd come in the morning, there's mouse turds everywhere.
Oh, gosh.
Have to clean it all up. And we set traps and poison, and, you know, they just laughed at all that. Ha, 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 ha.
They had humor.
Yes.
At the absurdity of you trying to kill them.
So I was getting pretty mad at them. And the kitchen was separated by a small dining room, and then led directly into the main living room. And then our bedroom was off of that. It was just a one-bedroom apartment. And when I was 12 years old, a friend had brought back on a trip from Borneo a real-life machete that they used in the cane fields. And it was in a leather scabbard with hand-tooled little ornaments and silver buckles, and you know, it was about the coolest thing in the world that a 12-year-old boy could have. I was like, I cannot believe my parents are letting me have a machete. But it was a gift from a family friend, so I got to keep the machete and carried it with me everywhere. When I moved out of the house, I took it with me. It went with me to every apartment I've ever had. Still have it to this day. But it was long. It was like 36 inches. It was didn't fit in a box very well, so I kept it in my golf club bag. And I didn't have any place to put the golf clubs in that apartment. We were short on apartment or on closet space, so I had it behind the sofa. So we're sitting there in our living room watching the VCR back in the days before DVD, and it's dark in the living room, but it's light in the kitchen. And I look over, and there's this little mouse sitting in the doorway of the kitchen. Now, he can't see us because we're in the dark, but we can see him because he's in the light. He's just kind of looking out in the living room. What's going on out there? And at this point, you know, I'm enraged. We've been taunted by the mice for months and months. They've laughed at our poisons and our sticky traps. I've vowed vengeance against the mouse. And I said, honey, there's the mouse. She said, well, do something. And I said, I don't have anything. You know, there's no magazine. So I reach behind the couch, and I feel the golf club bag, and there's the machete. And so without thinking, I grab the machete, and in one, two, three big steps, I leap over the mouse, and I get between him and the refrigerator so he can't escape. And he turns and runs straight at me, and I brandish the machete, and he goes, oh, and throws on the brakes, and he runs to the opposite end of the kitchen, and it's just a dead-end corner, and he's just stuck in that corner. And I advance on him, and at this point I realize, I've got a machete in my hand. What were you planning on doing with that machete, Russell? I can't, you know, scar up the floor of the kitchen or we lose our security deposit. I don't want to chop the mouse in half. That would be gross. So in a split second, I get the plan that I'm going to stun him with the flat of the blade. Now, if you've ever swung a machete, you know that it's not too finely balanced an instrument. And to try and swing it sideways is worse. So I'm swinging this machete sideways. And the mouse has got nowhere to go, but he can see this big machete coming from a mile away. So he leaps straight into the air each time. Yes. So I'm swinging. And the mouse is just going boing, 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 boing. And this went on for like, it feels like, you know, 5 minutes. I'm sure it was just like six or seven swings. Eventually, I, you know, swung too far and couldn't get back in time. And he got through my legs and off to the races and disappeared. But my wife was just sitting there in the hallway, just laughing her ass off at me, just laughing. And so,
and I'm sure the mouse went back to the other mice and laughed his head off.
He was probably a little too freaked out to laugh at that point, but maybe later he laughed.
But it's as he tells his children.
Yes, as he tells his children.
He will laugh. Sure.
So from that day forward, the machete, which I still own, was christened the mouse knife. And I keep it under my bed, you know, in case there's intruders or anything.
Or a mouse.
And every once in a while, we'll wake up in the middle of the night, one of the kids will roll over or something, and my wife has bat ears. And she'll wake up and go, oh, honey, I think there's somebody in the house. And I'll say, do you want me to get the mouse knife? And we'll both just start laughing. And it totally breaks the, you know, the tension of the fear or whatever. And so my advice to Bill is find some place like that in your life where you were able to laugh at something and it was funny. And just bring it back every once in a while. If you don't feel that you can be humorous, if you can't get into that energy, just call on a situation before. Just have a phrase like that that reminds you of a previous situation and just draw that energy forward with you. It's not you have to call on that energy in the moment. You can just connect to it anywhere in your life that you've had it before.
You know, and people can have humor and not tell humorous stories. Mm-hmm. There's nothing I hate worse than somebody trying to be funny.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so wrong. But you know, Terry's one of those, our technical person's one of those persons that I can have great humor with. She is so good and will join with me if I make her the butt of the joke. Mm-hmm. And she really does find humor in that. She may act like she's totally offended, but she finds total humor in it and really can laugh with me. But she's not a big joke teller.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people think, well, if you have humor, then you're a... No, not at all. It's whether you can enjoy the absurdities of the non-heartful patterns, whether it's yours or somebody else's or theirs. You know, you can tell about your own or share about theirs or somebody else's. She really has that, but she doesn't go around telling jokes all the time. So, you know, some people think that humor is like that. So, Bill, just because you don't tell jokes, it doesn't mean that you really don't have humor. Okay, we have another email. This is from Diane. It says, in my family, humor was about meanness. As you spoke, it was a way to tear someone down. I've been afraid to even bring the humor I hide inside because of that family perspective. It says, Jackie, thank you for the new image of humor. Russell, thank you for your humor. What a gift.
Well, thank you.
Yes, thank you, Diane. And you know, how we perceive humor or any energy does tend to go back to those original family pictures. And that's a lot of why we try to meditate and have a visual. My picture of humor has expanded because of the picture I got.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would say, yes, I'm not... It's not one of my biggest energies, but I have humor. I can definitely laugh at my students and their patterns and me and my patterns and oh, my husband and his patterns. I really like those.
Yeah. And if you are able to get beyond, you know, the wounds or whatever that you have around humor, because some people have been very mean with it and use it to belittle others. But if you can find a true piece of humor and connect to somebody around that, it makes one of the most lasting connections ever. I mean, some of the friends that I keep in touch with that I've had for the longest time are people that I was able to laugh with.
Well, that's because you have a big piece of humor and that's a strong resonance for you. So, you know, for some people, that wouldn't be a bonding.
Mm-hmm.
But for you, it's huge energy that you have.
And I think it goes back to, like I said, that if you can share humor, if you can share a laugh with somebody, if you can both be in that place, you're doing nothing but laughing at the patterns. You're seeing the absurdity of what's not heartful. And so that instantly puts you both above the... Well, I've got to do it perfect. You've got to do it perfect. You know, it lets you see that both of you are beyond what's happening and whether you did it right or any of that stuff. And those kind of connections for me tend to last a lot longer than ones where, you know, some sort of outcome is mixed up in it.
Mm-hmm. My mother had a huge energy of humor. She had a huge energy of humor. And she used it really mostly in the way that we're talking about. But sometimes she would do it in a cutting way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with any energy that we have to be careful if it's a big energy that we don't misuse it.
Right.
That we just are very careful and see it as a sacred thing. Because very few people would put humor as a carrier of sacredness.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people have, you know, tainted that because they use humor to deflect from something real.
Uh-huh.
They'll laugh about something when they don't want to be vulnerable or honest.
Yes. And, or they'll joke to cover up what they're really feeling.
Yeah.
And not use it as a pure energy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I definitely began with that energy to see the difference in Mother when she was being real, because she really did have humor, but then it could be very cutting and mean.
Yeah.
And see that difference. It is time for another one of our sponsors. This one is the Ottawahee Wellness Retreat. It's a way where you don't just get away, even though you do get to get away, but it's a place where you can go and be healthy. You can go home actually healthier. Most vacations, people go away and they have a lot of fun and they may even get rested, but they don't always eat well. The energy that they mix with isn't always, it's touristy and not always the most heartful. So at the Ottawahee Wellness Retreat, you have all the amenities of a bed and breakfast, plus access to a health food store, a fitness room, peaceful walking trails, and 10 alternative healers. This is where retreat becomes renewal. It's the Ottawahee Wellness Retreat, and you can find it at ottawahee.com, A-D-A-W-E-H-I, ottawahee.com. We have an email from Jessica in Columbus, North Carolina. It says, Dad, this is your daughter. Dad, you should tell about your friend who was the little kids, who the little kids called Big Pig Face.
This is not really a funny story, but my kids are obsessed with it. They always want to hear this story. I had a friend, this is that same year that I was a safety patrol, and so I would get there early and I would watch all the people file into the halls of school. And one day, right before the bell rang, my friend, Mike, showed up. And he's, you know, supposed to be in class. We had one bell would ring and then you had like 2 minutes before the next bell would ring. There was a warning bell. He showed up right at the warning bell, and he's supposed to be getting to class, but he's like sneaking down the hall, real quiet, trying to stay next to the wall. And I'm like, Mike, what are you doing? He said, shh, shh. And he gets right up near the door to the second grade classroom. We're seventh graders at this point. We're big deal. And these little second graders, how old are you in second grade? Like
seven.
Seven, six or seven, something like that. They're all supposed to be in their seats by now because the warning bells rang. But he gets within a few feet of the door, and one of them is apparently on guard duty watching. And he pokes his head out, and he calls to all the other ones, it's him! It's Pig Face! And they all come spilling out of the classroom, like 20 little seven-year-old kids, and just mob this near teenager. We were 14 years old then. This big teenage boy, they're just mobbing him, just like ants crawling all over him, pulling on him, biting him, kicking him. And they're like, Pig Face must die. Get Pig Face. He's like swatting them loose. And
was this Mike who did this? They're on Mike?
Yeah, they're attacking him.
Well, why did he do this?
Well, this is the part that makes it so bizarre that my kids want to hear this over and over again. He gets loose, runs to the classroom, and I think, I have got to find out what that's about. But, you know, then I have to run to class, and I put my safety uniform away, and I go to class, and then we're right into the lesson. I never got a chance to ask him what that was about. So I don't know the ending to this story. To me, it's a terribly unsatisfying story, but my kids just roll on the floor. Aha, Pig Face, Pig Face. I don't understand why it's so funny, but they always
they
ask
like
for
it.
That.
Well, somebody out there will. We have an email from Susan in Charlotte, North Carolina. I love joking around with people, but most of the time it's very passive-aggressive. How do I know when it's humor versus passive-aggressive? Well, passive-aggressive is not humor.
Right.
Just write out, Susan. It's not. You know, passive-aggressive is when we are using it as a cover-up.
Right.
When we are not really looking at the absurdity of the non-heartful pattern and saying, you know, that's our creation and it's there for a reason, but that's really absurd. That's really funny that we had to create that to get our lesson. But passive aggressive is when you're trying to manipulate your outside world.
Mm-hmm.
And we can use humor for manipulation. A lot of people do. You can get people, if you use it to get them in a good mood, then you're manipulating. If you just do it because you are seeing that in the moment, like you said it to the man about your bicycle, that put you in a better mood.
Right.
And if they want to join you, that's great, but not to manipulate them to get in a good mood.
The key for me is always, does the person include themselves in the humor? Are they laughing at themselves too? Are they saying we're all funny creatures? Or are they saying, you are such a funny creature, we should all laugh at you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they're pointing the finger at you and considering themselves to be above that, then it always seems mean and cutting to me. But
yes.
if they're just including themselves in it, then it usually feels pure to me.
And, you know, if what I teach is that everything we create, since we are all one, everything we create, we are all part of that drama or creation. Even though they may be acting out what we're seeing, we're still part of it. I mean, like your wife was part of the mouse story, just not just you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so when you really can begin to see that everything is part of your creation too, then you're never laughing at someone. You're laughing at the absurdity of the creation of which you are all a part.
Right. Right. The ego cannot handle being laughed at. So if they're trying to shield themselves while exposing you to laughter, then it's probably their ego doing the work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Do we have, Terry, do we have somebody else that wants our few words of wisdom here? This is from Tim in Atlanta. Is there a way to be more humorous? I love being around funny people, and I'd like to be more funny myself. You know, that kind of goes back, Tim, to what I said when people try to be humorous. But I think it's a lot of maybe what Russell was getting at when we say that if you can think of funny things and begin to feel the humor of what makes you laugh, you'll begin to see your piece of humor, because everybody's is not the same.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we have to remember, that how you look at something in life that's happening may not be the way somebody else views it. So you have to find your piece of humor, just like everybody has to find their piece of beauty. You know, everybody's not beautiful in the same ways,
mm-hmm.
but everybody has their own piece of humor. You know, I envy people. My mother and my husband well, she's dead now, but they have similar humor. And I admire that humor. It's very quick wit.
Mm-hmm.
It's just sharp, and I admire it. Mine is not that quick, and I know that, and that doesn't make mine less. It doesn't make mine not only less in size, but less in quality. It's neither quantity or quality less. It's just really, really different.
Mm-hmm.
And I can still appreciate his humor a lot. It's just not like mine. But just because mine isn't like his doesn't mean we don't resonate and laugh about the same thing. When I'm laughing at his humor, I'm in humor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have several TV shows that I find funny. I don't really have time to watch them anymore. But thanks to the internet, you can, you know, catch the funniest bits in little clips. And I stumbled across a clip the other day that had all the really great scenes from a whole season compressed into about a 10-minute clip. And I just watched through a whole season of this television show, just seeing all the funny bits. And was just in a great mood, just laughing inside. Went to work, didn't tell a joke, didn't try and make anybody laugh, but people were just resonating that with me. People were telling me jokes. They were laughing at themselves. I wasn't saying anything funny. I wasn't even trying to get them to laugh. I was just so full of that energy from having just laughed myself while I was watching that clip before I went to work that I just kind of drew it out of people.
Yeah, that's a good story. We have another email from Terry, who's sitting right here next to me. It's not fair that I don't have a microphone when you talk about me. I feel helpless. See, I take it all back. She has humor. All right. This is Lisa from Little Rock, Arkansas. Great show. Thanks for sharing your humor. I am totally enjoying listening. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you, Lisa.
I do enjoy laughing, and I liked what you said about the healing quality of laughter. And I really hope that people will take as a baby step today. One of the baby steps I said was just try smiling inside. Mm-hmm. We smile a lot outside. It's sort of a habit. You know, we greet somebody, we smile, and that's good. It's not a bad thing, but smile inside. Mm-hmm. If you can learn how to smile inside, it's like you said in your story, you're carrying that humor or that joy or whatever it is around that causes other people to lighten up.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you don't say anything or if you're not laughing, you're still carrying it around. So that was one of my baby steps, is try to learn how to smile inside.
Mm-hmm.
It might start with an outside smile, but learn how to smile inside. Make that smile on the outside go all the way inside.
That's great advice.
And then, of course, since I brought it up, I have to add is that you also realize when there's an irritation or a judgment coming up that it's because the heart is missing.
Mm-hmm.
In you, in them, in the script, in both of you. And begin to find the humor in the script or the happening that is not heartful, that is making you upset. So instead of going to the upset, realize you have a choice to go to the humor. Now, just making fun of the situation is not the same to seeing the humor of the situation.
That's true.
Even though sometimes humor is making fun, which is also humor, it can be a cover-up. I'm not talking about a cover-up. So the two go together.
Uh-huh.
While you're looking at each situation, the ones you normally wouldn't smile at, smile inside.
Yeah. Good advice.
Did you have anything else to add on your
I'd just like to reiterate my two baby steps. I've mentioned them both already, but the first one is just admit that one of your patterns is funny. You know, if you can find something you do and see it as absurd and admit that, it puts you automatically into that place where you're not tied into your ego. And that's where humor really happens.
Yeah.
And the second one is it doesn't have to be in the moment. Like I said with the TV clip, like I said with the mouse knife story, find something from your past where you really got into that energy and just use a little phrase or something, work it into the conversation to remind yourself of that place, and it pulls the past and the present together, and boom, you're in that energy.
Yes, those are good. Those are good. So we're really grateful that you have joined us today, and remember, we really welcome your comments, we welcome your questions, we welcome your sharing your pictures of your meditation, or just to say hello. Just to say hello. Let us know you're out there. I mean, we know you're out there. We get the clips from our website to see what locations, and by the way, it's scattered all over the United States, and we really are grateful for that. But we like to know that you're with us consciously, in that you're saying, hey, here I am. So please do that. Please do that with us. And you don't have to submit a question. You can feel free to, but you don't have to. It doesn't even have to be on today's subject. If one of the other, when you're listening to some of our archived shows, If you have a comment on those, we may not elaborate on it very much, but it's nice because people keep up with the shows, and those that can't listen during the day, go back to the archives. Our archives are well listened to. If you're having trouble in your life with a particular area, go back and check the titles and see if that's the energy you need. Thank you for joining us, and we'll be with you next Monday.